We're having our class on the Jewish home, and tonight it was requested that we focus a little bit on dating, so I want us to discuss a few key concepts that overlap between dating and marriage. And we will begin with what I call the Pygmalion challenge. Pygmalion was a Greek, sculptor. And Pygmalion, he was a very good sculptor, so all the suitors tried to set him up. And every time they set him up, he'd come back and say, "No, that's not it." And he got fed up with all the Greek suitors. So finally, this is a Greek philosophy, right? It doesn't have to be true, right? Make up a story. So he takes his takes a big slab of stone, takes his chisel, and he starts chiseling out exactly the form of who he's looking for. And after he finishes making this beautiful sculpture of a woman, he tells all the suitors, "That's who I'm looking for." So they say, "We've never seen a woman like that." And he says, "But that's my wife." So they say, "But we can't bring her to you. When we find her, we'll bring her, but we don't have such a woman." So Pygmalion sets up an idol of Zeus and starts praying to Zeus. And of course, in Greek mythology, anything can happen, right? And so one day she walks off the pedestal and they get married and they live happily ever after. Okay, so that's a beautiful story for Greek mythology. But in real life, it doesn't work that way. The problem is that this Greek story taps into a phenomenal human weakness. We all have an element of Pygmalion in us. What that means is that when you date, so even if you can't draw it like Pygmalion, on some level, we have a concept of what we're looking for. On some level, we have a concept that has nothing to do with reality. And then when we meet Mrs. Wright, we have this challenge because it's nice, it's going well, it's actually fun, and things are pleasant, and I feel very comfortable with her, and we share values, and we share goals, and we share dreams, and she could be the mother of my kids, and I don't really want to continue life without her. I would like to see myself going on with her the rest of my life. It's pleasant. But wait a second, she can't be my wife because on some level, I had all kinds of dreams. And every person ends up being faced with that challenge, even if it's not so defined. Meaning when we meet Mrs. Wright, we suddenly have to ask ourselves, but I didn't know I was going to marry someone who was 5 inches taller than me, 3 inches shorter than me, 12 inches wider than me, dark-skinned, light-skinned, with 4 degrees, with 3 degrees, with a PhD who's a nurse, uneducated, barely literate, but wonderfully entertaining, with a great sense of humor, with a bunch of freckles. Doesn't matter what, but there are elements in the personality, in the look, in the sense of humor that are a surprise, where you suddenly say, "That's not what I was looking for." But it works. What happens when we meet our wife, says Freud, there are two decisions that man make that come from his innermost being, and those are A, the person they choose to marry, and B, the profession or livelihood that person chooses. Those two cannot be explained based on A or B or C or D. They stem from the innermost core of who we are. And so when we meet someone and we match, and again, I want to define match for a minute because people get very confused. I got a phone call the other day. A couple got engaged and they're considering breaking it off. So I say, "Why?" And they say, "Because there are no fireworks." I say, "What is there?" And they say, "Well, we like one another. We share values. We share dreams. We share perspective. It's fun to be together. And we're very comfortable with one another." So I said, "What's missing?" That's exactly, you know, if I had to draw up a formula, that's what I would say you should look for in marriage. They said, "But you're supposed to be all excited. You're supposed to be head over heels. You're supposed to be enthralled. You're supposed to see fireworks." I said, "No, you're not. Some people do, and some people don't." It's also a reflection of personality, meaning some people sense things that way. Other people don't. You can't say whoever senses that that's wrong. I think that there's nothing wrong if you have everything else. You want to build your life with this person. You feel like you share values. You feel like I want this person to be my partner in raising kids. It's okay. Are you willing to bash Pygmalion? Are you willing to take that statue and toss it and say reality is better? Ah, but it's not what I was expecting. Right. We have to be prepared in life that it's not what I was expecting. That's a reality. Now, step one in dating is to be open to marry the right person. And people are not. It's a process. You reach the point where things are working right. Then you reach the point where you tell yourself, this can't be right, even though it makes sense and it feels right, but most people don't know how to explain this to themselves, but what they're really experiencing is this idea, I thought I was going to marry someone who was, dot, dot, dot. Whatever you fill in on that blank, if this is working right and it's going well, so you realize you're running up against Pygmalion here. So that's where you have to tell yourself, am I ready to bash Pygmalion? Most people have this challenge, and when you meet older bachelors who aren't married, very often this is why. Because they were never prepared to bash Pygmalion. It's a very, very common reason why people can't get married. Now, it is worded by dating coaches. They have another name for it. They also call it the better other. That men, specifically, have a challenge that when they meet someone and it's good, they tell themselves, it's good, it's just not perfect. That's another way of wording. It's another version of the same dilemma. She's great, but there are other girls. I've seen better looking girls. I've dated girls who were more funny. I've dated girls who were more entertaining. I've dated girls where I was more excited. I've dated girls where there was more mystery. There are all kinds of things that people will say, which is really the same thing. It's called the better other. Now, what I'm about to tell you, this is where we go from dating to marriage, is that this challenge can go with a person their whole life. It doesn't necessarily end when you decide to get engaged. Meaning the morning after you get engaged, the most common thing is to feel bad about it. Terrible thing, isn't it? Whenever people come tell me they get engaged, what tips do you have to say? So I say, Mazel Tov, do you regret it yet? They look like, what? Say, you didn't want to tell anyone. I'm telling you, it's normal. It's normal after you get engaged to have second thoughts and say, what did I do? Right? You think once you made the decision, you finished, it's done, it's clear. No. You make the decision, that's when you start questioning yourself. Buyer's remorse. And of course, you want to put on the facade. What am I, a fool? What did I do this for? And then you put on a facade. I want to be... And then you look around and you say, everyone around me seems to get engaged and be happy. It's only me who's second-guessing myself. Let me tell you, I've accompanied hundreds of chasanim and couples. It's not only you. I've yet to meet one that doesn't have second thoughts. Yeah, it's normal. So, how do you overcome it? If you work it out in your own mind and heart why this makes sense, so then you have to make a decision. This is right. This is what I'm doing. And then it becomes mind over matter. So, 7 years ago, we were teaching a B'nai Akiva group. Back when I was in a yeshiva that had groups like you guys coming in every 2 months. So, then it was Lehava, which is different than your group, I think. I had a friend who was teaching with me there. And I mentioned this idea to him. I mentioned to him that, you know, people, after they get married, they're still thinking, did I get it right? And that's destructive to them. He said, wait, there's a way out? Now, he was teaching. He was, like, married, like, 7, 8 years by then. I said, sure, there's a way out. You have to decide this is it. And then it's it. He said, that's so interesting. I said, okay. He said, no, you don't understand. 2, 3 years ago, I called up the shaliach in Russia, and I asked him, I said, you know, I'm married already 5 years, and I still keep questioning whether I married the right person or not. So the shaliach says to me, and I'm married 25 years, and I'm also still asking that question. So that was an eye-opener to me. I make the decision not to. Meaning, I think you have to make a decision not to.
What does that say about women?
I don't know that it says anything about women.
If so many guys regret or don't realize,
the common denominator is the men, not the women.
Well, I don't know if I could say that, but I would say that the story in the beginning of Bereshit in Genesis teaches us something. Man was married a total of a few hours. 1 hour, 2 hours. And then, what does he say to God?
Why'd you give this thing to me?
Yeah, right, it's all her fault. I was managing just fine before she came to the scene. So
really
Chazal tell us that that is the nature of man. To not appreciate his wife, and to be able to take the greatest gifts he gets in marriage and put them down and say...
But she's the cesspool of, like, complete, utter emotion.
They're seeing you here. Don't say this. You still want to get married. We could ask them to cut you out.
Yeah, we have a problem.
Okay.
But it's true, no?
I didn't hear the end of the sentence.
They're very, very emotional. Irrationally emotional.
So that's a separate class. We have to discuss that. Laila tov. Laila tov. Laila tov.
I grew up with three sisters, Rabbi. I really know women.
We're continuing, yeah.
Like, very much so.
Oh, you're in a comfortable seat. You don't need a...
There's a camera right behind your head. Okay.
So we're ending this?
No, we're continuing.
Like, I can vouch for all men. I could be the witness. Like, I promise you guys that women are, they're very different.
Right. Different isn't bad.
Very emotional in an irrational way is toxic.
So that needs to be discussed.
You got
to
put up with that for 80 years.
That needs to be discussed. Okay. You know, Hashem could have made it that men marry men and women marry women. And Hashem didn't. So obviously there's something there. There's something there. There's something we have to learn from them and they have to learn from us.
Patience we have to learn. I mean,
that's for sure one quality we have to learn, yeah? Yeah.
But it's irrational. It's like very impractical and weird.
Okay, you said two different things. Irrational, so sometimes it's more and sometimes it's less. Impractical, that I wouldn't say. On the contrary, I think men learn from women how to be practical. That
no.
needs to be discussed.
No.
Okay? Yeah, these are big topics. It's
I've
not
dated
for
a girl
one second.
For 2 years and another girl for 9 months, and I
That's
promise
it.
You guys.
No.
Tell you what, the husband goes on a trip. Who packs his bags?
You're
Almost
picking,
universally.
You're picking the tiniest
no,
examples.
It came up right away, instantly. Who packs his bags? Universally.
I do. I pack her bag as well. That's how it was.
Let's move on. Okay. To be continued. So there's a major challenge when we get married, and that is to decide not will this work, but how will this work. And that makes all the difference. Because within a marriage, if our question is will this work, then it's almost impossible to ever make it work. Because marriage involves many, many hardships. Every day, if you're going to have a list, you will fill that list every day as to how many annoying things are going on in your marriage. So if the question is, will this work, the answer is always no. If the question is, how will this work, so then you start figuring out how. But that's a decision, going back to your question. Does a person always have this question? He has to decide whether he will question, will this work, or how will this work. And it's a decision he has to make, because the challenges are there. The difficulties are there. As you correctly pointed out, it's not simple to put together a man and a woman in one house and make it work.
It's the most complicated thing ever.
Well, if it's the best thing, then good things come hard.
The world was very different back then. Men and women behaved very differently back then. And we're learning stuff that people wrote back then, and we're trying to understand it today. But the world is different, and people are different. And society changed. And they
really? People are different? I just showed you how your statement is reflected in what Adam said.
The concepts are the same, but the details are very different. We're putting up with much, much different things than they put up back then. The concepts...
Give me an example. What's different?
The daily life.
Example.
You've got social media. You let's not talk
general. Example. Give me a specific example, and let's see if Chazal addressed it.
I mean, when you help around the house, like you think you mentioned this last week, maybe, but. I mean, like, when you're helping around the house, like, isn't it understandable that the guy does the thing that the girl can't do and offer our help with other things, and the girl does the things that, like, we don't do? Like, typically, she's...
So, again, what do you think changed that what? That
they're just never satisfied with anything you do, no matter how much you help.
No matter how much you help, they're never satisfied with how much you do. So
why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that?
So if the Talmud tells us a story of a couple that were married, and then they benched, and he didn't offer her from the cup of benching, how mad did she get? Did she just walk away from the table? No.
World War II.
Did she walk away from the table and go to the attic and pout? No. Did she walk away from the table and go to the attic and just break one keg of wine? No. Did 10 kegs of wine suffice? No. How about 100? Also not. Try 400 kegs of wine. That's a story in Gemara.
You see, that's irrational behavior.
But I'm just showing you, you're saying things were different back then. And I'm giving you a story from the Gemara.
Well, I said the concept stayed the same.
Okay, so we're learning the concepts, right? Right? How do you like that?
It's like today's world is sneers and all that. God forbid. God forbid I should do it for her approval, but she just never approves of anything.
So in the book of Josephus, it records a conversation with Daniel and the king's top advisors, and one of the things Daniel says is that even the king, whatever he does, he waits for his wife's approval. He's always waiting. He's dying to hear a good word from her. You see, Daniel described a relationship of a pagan king, the Persian king, and his wife, and that's how he describes it. And the king agrees, and all his advisors agree. That's the way of the world. Man is waiting. And if you read a little bit about Cleopatra, you see the world always ran this way. So I don't know why it's so bad to say what he just said. I think it's human nature. We do things, and women don't realize how much the husband is dying for a good word. And she,
it's not just that. I mean, it's like when they're mad, you don't know they're mad. And then you behave a certain way, and then it's apparent
that they're again,
mad.
That's a Gemara. We'll get to that.
It's too late. And like...
Slowly.
The dynamics are so complicated.
Can't deal with everything in one class. Let's work our way there. We'll get there. You're right. It's complicated, but we're looking to gain tools.
Everyone here is pressuring me to get married, man.
Don't get married so fast. Mm. Let's go on. So, we said, yes.
I have a question, Rob, because you are an experienced man, and I would like to know, when we have a shidduch, are these signs... which show us that